Hello and welcome to Lead with Heart. I'm your host, Dr. Jesse Hansen, and today, Metamorfinka, the farm of transformation, because Lead with Heart is all about amplifying transformation. So let's go check it out. So Metamorfinka has many different accommodations. However, I'm just gonna show you guys a couple of my favorites. La Cascada, if you don't know, that's waterfall. One of the most amazing waterfalls in Costa Rica called San Luis Cascada that is just outside this view. Metamorfinka is also amazing. It's much more homey. You've got your own little kitchen here, nice space here, accommodations for sleeping or upstairs. The best part, of course, is that brings nature in. San Luis waterfall right there. When you've got a space like this, transformation happens a lot easier. And if you guys aren't familiar, this is a beautiful blue jade plant that I just found on the ground. And just another one of the blessings that comes out of this beautiful deep nature jungle that we have. And one more accommodation I want to show you guys, Mariposa. I couldn't bring this whole show about transformation without honoring the master of transformation herself, La Mariposa, the butterfly. We are in the OSA in Costa Rica, which is one of the most biodiverse places on the planet, which is at the core of leading with heart. So what would a retreat center be without a beautiful spa section? We've got an infrared sauna, a beautiful jacuzzi, little fire circle here, and a beautiful swimming pool, fully set up spring water. It is actually heated, believe it or not. It can get actually a little bit chilly up here on these mountaintops in Costa Rica. And just a beautiful sacred space to enjoy yourself. Today, this is gonna be our set where we are going to open up people's hearts and minds, including my own. So can't wait to make some magic. Stay tuned for more what's coming here on Lead with Heart. Pura Vida, live the pure life. Welcome to Lead with Heart. I'm Dr. Jesse Hansen, and today we explore the essence of leadership beyond strategy and status. You're watching Now Media Television. Hello, and welcome back to Lead with Heart. I'm your host, Dr. Jesse Hansen. Today, this show, Lead with Heart, we're going to go deeper into strategy meets soul. We're going to go deeper into leadership that doesn't have to be guided by the mind and this idea of control, but rather looking deeper inside the wisdom of the body and the heart. So I'm very happy to be here with you guys today in the beautiful Metamorfinka deep in the jungle. And today my guest is none other than Gerard Schmidt. He's the founder of Emerald Ridge, a three-time former CEO who's led global organizations through M&A, complex restructurings, and high-stakes reinvention. And he now coaches CEOs and executives from the inside out. From the inside out, meaning I know this man well, and he is doing his work. He knows the work from the inside. So I'm so happy to have you here, Gerard. Welcome.
Thank you, Jesse. It's an absolute pleasure being here.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, you know, the theme with this show is not only to look deeper at what is leadership, leading by example. Is it just leading in the head? How does it come through the body? We're also looking at themes of the more that you know yourself, the more you're going to start to lead with heart naturally. So this first section that we're going to dive deeper into is all about who you are. I know your accolades and your LinkedIn profile is incredible. So many people look up to you, respect you, including myself. And I wanted to take some time to slow it down and just learn more about who you really are as a man, where you came from, not just geographically, but emotionally, energetically, spiritually. So I pass it to you to just share, you know, what do you want us to know about who you were?
It's who I was and who I am, right? Yeah. I'm very much a believer that my past has influenced me, but doesn't guide me. Everyone always asks about my accent first. You got a really funny accent. What's that all about? It's a byproduct of having grown up in South Africa to an Austrian father and a mother of English descent, and also having worked in multiple places around the world. So in many ways, my accent reflects the journey I've been on. It's global. Sometimes I question where I belong because of all this travel that I've been part of. But I grew up in a very, very humble, traditional household in Africa. I was the eldest of four kids. My parents were wonderful, loving parents. And still, I took messages away that probably haven't served me well over time.
Such as?
I spent the early part of my life as a leader, as a perfectionist, living in the left part of my brain, being deeply analytical, feeling that I needed to perform to be validated. There was this huge pull, like, I have to be great at what I do to be worthy. And that was the mantra that I stuck with for a while until I finally woke up and had a 2x4 slap me on the side of the head. And while I say it jokingly, part of what's become so important to me as I've gone through my journey, both inwardly and outwardly, is that I can be at times dismissive of that analytical left side, and yet it serves me so well as well. So I want to make sure that everything I do going forward is a blend of this heart-centered leadership, but also pulling in that left part, right? Because it's all about centering. So yeah, it was a fascinating upbringing. I mean, Africa is a unique continent. I feel it still in my heart deeply today. I feel like I'm a man of the earth. Mm. I like nothing more than to put my toes in the mud, yes. Smell the air in Africa, and just feel that freedom, which in many ways has manifested itself where I'm not a leader that does particularly well in the flashy scenes, all dressed up. I'd rather be in a t-shirt, hang out, and just have meaningful conversations to try and figure out whatever problem we're trying to solve. And sometimes that serves me well, and sometimes not.
Right. Depending on the audience.
Yeah, exactly.
Depending on the setting.
Right.
No, I appreciate all that so much, Gerard. And yeah, though I am probably one of the most common people to poke fun at the left brain or control mechanisms.
Oh, I know.
I also admit and honor that it is extremely important. And what I see is it's often just, you know, so many of us are overusing the left brain and underusing the right. So the lean in towards the right brain. However, I fully hear you, and I've known you long enough and seen all that you, not all, but much of what you do. And absolutely, there's no question that left brain power that you gained, it's as I'm learning younger on through perfectionism, absolutely has its power. And the 2x4 that woke you up and brought you more into your heart and to honor that also matters. That is the key of the balancing.
Right. I am a poster child of over-rotation and using my left brain at the expense of almost everything else.
Yeah.
So while on paper, it looks like I've achieved a lot, how I feel about that is quite a different story.
Well, how do you feel?
I look back and I would say, if only I could have developed the wisdom that I have now when I was in my 20s, I would have showed up as a very, very different leader. And
take us back there. Tell me what started to happen in the 20s, like the way that perfectionist drove you. What did that equal 20, 30 years ago?
So I go back to the idea that I was so driven by achievement and perfection. I picked the most difficult degree I could do at university. At the time, it was aerospace engineering. Mm-hmm. I needed to get the top grades in my class. I transitioned into wanting to be an astronaut, but I'm actually too tall. So that dream didn't work out, but right. I translated that into the business world, and I just kept pushing for higher achievement, higher titles, more accomplishments.
And do you feel like aerospace engineering is not what you end up going into, right?
No.
Right.
I was there for a while, and I found that I'm not actually a particularly good engineer. I value the structured thinking that it taught me, but I'm not a particularly good engineer.
But it's ironic that the perfectionistic drive was like, I'm going to go for the hardest degree, get the best grades, and the irony being that's not even where you end up going.
It's not my path at all.
Yet the light in it is the focus that gave you the discipline.
Right.
So what did you end up moving into?
So from... Yeah, that failed attempt as a bad engineer. I ended up
working... too tall of an astronaut.
Exactly, I know. But if they ever want a tall astronaut, I'll sign up. I moved into management consulting. So I worked at one of the top-tier strategy consultants globally, a company called McKinsey. And again, I wanted to push myself to see if I was worthy to be hired by a company like that. Mm. I was fairly convinced that when I got the job, I was the hiring mistake of the century for that company. but again, like I lent into this need to perform, to fit in, do reasonably well. And from management consulting, I ended up joining one of my clients, and I became chief operating officer of a big retail bank in Canada. I was a very, very young individual then. And again, you know, how confused I was.
This is like late 20s now, 30?
So I became chief operating officer at 33, and I went from leading small groups of very talented individuals to inheriting 3,000 people overnight as a leader. And I made more people-based mistakes in those first 18 months than I think a lot of people will make in a lifetime, because I was leading with my brain. I will be the smartest person in the room. I will solve this with my intellect, rather than having space for others' views and just allowing my full sense as a leader to show up. I was in that role for a number of years, and many people thought that I was one of the potential heir apparents to become the CEO of the bank at that point in time. And I got caught up in a bit of an ego trap, thinking that I was not untouchable, but one of the golden boys.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't turn out that way, and I ended up losing my role at that bank, and I'm so glad I did.
Mm.
Right? Because it was a necessary humbling for my own journey.
I want to slow you down on one key topic just to highlight it. You know, I love what you said, Gerard, of, you know, realizing, looking back now, it's easier to see it, but that you, and we've seen this in many leaders, is like, want to be the most intelligent, most brightest. Yeah, in a way, it is this idea of control, right? I need to have more power and more control in order to be the best leader.
Yeah.
And so I just want to acknowledge that you're not alone in that, you know, sort of fallacy, I would say. And yet, I'm curious to hear how, yeah, you said you got, I guess, asked to step down, or that became too much of an issue that you no longer had that position.
I got fired.
Yeah.
Let's just call it what it is.
Plain and simple. Okay.
Plain and simple. I got fired.
Right? Yeah. Okay. And you think for some of those same reasons?
That it had nothing to do with my own performance. Okay. This particular organization had a bad habit of, once they lopped off the head of the organization, the lieutenants also got lopped off as well.
But gotcha.
Anyway, that's neither here nor there.
Gotcha, But the important part is that the learning in it is, you can see where you went for the power control type of leadership. And then, so take me a little further down the timeline. When did that start to shift?
It hasn't shifted yet,
okay,
brother. I'm still caught up in this control performative mindset. I then moved to the UK, ran a $3 billion business for a large UK bank, and then I returned to Canada and took on my first CEO role of a smaller organization, which then evolved into becoming CEO of a good-sized technology public company in Canada. And we used mergers and acquisitions to rapidly grow this business to about $1.7 billion. And it was at that time that certain events happened in my life that were the wake-up call to say, you know what, perhaps I don't have this figured out.
That moment where our personal life hits our professional life, right? Which I know you're not alone in that, how much they interplay. We like to pretend that they're separate.
I had this view that church and state shall never come together, and reality is I'm just one human being, right? So my professional and personal life are tightly interwoven.
Yeah.
And it was probably only at age 45 that awareness and the real work began.
Yeah. So I want to highlight again just that I just have seen, I know I can humbly admit that in my own, I've worked with thousands of people and see that where we have this idea that church and state are separated, professional, personal, and yet you said it beautifully, I'm just one human being with this one body. And I've considered it a sign of spiritual evolution and emotional maturation is when we can realize we are all in many layers of relationships with each other, and what happens at our job impacts our home and vice versa. So I think that's, that's already some wisdom you're bringing through that we're going to go deeper into in a later section. So thank you so much. We are going to take a quick break here. Thanks for opening us up with your story. When we get back, we're going to continue to learn more about who Gerard is becoming and where his path is taking him. So stay tuned here on Lead with Heart. We'll be right back with more insights, stories, and practices to help you lead from your whole self. This is Lead with Heart on Now Media Television. Leadership isn't just about decisions. It's about presence, compassion, and courage. I'm Dr. Jesse Hansen, somatic psychologist and healer. And on Lead with Heart, we explore what happens when we lead with awareness, compassion, and the body in mind. From brain health to relational intelligence, from trauma-informed leadership to embodied teams, each episode reveals a deeper way to lead. Lead with Heart is airing now on Now Media TV, because the greatest leaders don't just guide people, they awaken them. And we're back. I'm Dr. Jesse Hansen, and you're watching Lead with Heart on Now Media Television. Let's continue embracing leadership with presence and purpose.
Want more of what you're watching? Stay tuned to Lead with Heart and all your Now Media favorites. You can just download the app on Apple TV, Roku, iOS, Android. If you prefer listening on podcasts, you can find us on Apple, Spotify, iHeartRadio, SiriusXM, all the platforms out there. We've got you covered, so stay tuned on Now Media TV. Welcome back to Lead with Heart. I am here with Gerard Schmidt. So happy to have you here. So far, we've unearthed this story about a young man who had an overall good enough family upbringing in Africa, but somehow got imprinted with this idea that you're only good if you're perfect. And so this drive has taken you through, we've kind of heard up to, it sounds like, you know, mid to late 30s. And then you mentioned that something big happened in your personal life that opened up and made you start to think deeper about who you are and, I'm assuming, how you lead. So I'd like to pick it up with you there. And basically this segment is all about the becoming, you know, what's been happening since then and leaning into who you are now. So keep us informed.
Let me start with what happened in my life in my mid-40s. And the details don't matter. What's more important is that for the first time in my life, I cast my mind back. I cast my body back to my story. What had actually gone on in my life? What were the real imprints that had happened as a result of my upbringing, both the positives and the negatives, that started to shape why I had formed this narrative of being performative? And that was a very, very necessary part for me to take myself deeper and start to make sense of why I'd shown up the way I had, and to start to slowly open me up to different possibilities. And I've got to tell you, Jesse, I think I'm one of the world's slowest learners. Because I can intellectualize where the journey needs to take me, but getting there, it's a journey. And it's still a journey today.
Yeah.
And I'd say that what I'm noticing now is that performative part is but a part. It doesn't define me. It is not me. It is a part. It's not a part I'm trying to shed, but it's a part that needs to just have space, the appropriate amount of space in me.
And be balanced with other parts of you.
And it's that balance that I'm leaning more into, which is to say, I know that I actually have an incredibly big heart that's very, very loving. And yet that performative part shielded that heart from showing up. I was fearful. I was actually scared of letting my heart show up professionally. CEOs don't let their hearts be seen. They know what the answers are, right? Blah, 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 blah. And I started to really play with this idea of how do I allow myself to be vulnerable while still being a leader? And how do I hold space for the apparent contradiction of that, you know, as we've defined leadership in the Western world? And it's been a playful game. At times it's worked well, at times not so well. But what I've noticed is that it's completely reframed the capacity that I bring as a leader. So I'll give you a few examples. During the initial phase of Russia's invasion of the Ukraine, they were bombing Kyiv. We had a team of 200 software developers in Kyiv that were being bombed. And as a leader sitting in North America, I was faced with the question, what do I do? There was nothing in my training that equipped me for dealing with that situation. So I had to lean in to my heart to say, what do I actually want to do here? How do I want to show up as a leader? So we leant into trying to figure out, how do we hire a military convoy to get our people and their families out of Kyiv? You know, there's no MBA that teaches you.
Exactly. It's the human element.
It's the human element. And another small example, during COVID, you know, I remember this vividly, the second quarter of 2019, our sales were plummeting by $300 million in one quarter. I felt like I was steering over a precipice, not really sure if there was a bottom to this insanity. And I came to the conclusion the only way I could show up was with my heart, not with my intellect. And I needed to make some very, very difficult decisions that were in support of looking after our employees at the expense of shareholders. And that probably wasn't a decision I would have wisely made if I'd only lent into that one part of me.
Yeah.
So I'm noticing that I'm entering this phase where I can much more fully appreciate the impact of the decisions I'm having on a broader set of constituents versus pure pursuit of performance.
Yeah, right. Well said, man. You brought a lot there. Let me digest it. Saying back to you, I heard you say this in your own words, but leaders don't feel, they think, right? That's the old program, right? And that's, I think, again, why this show exists, is to help more and more of us start to feel safer that it is okay to be bi-hemispheric. It's okay to have brain-heart coherence. It's okay, as you're leading by example here, to look at the whole implications of the human levels of things, not just shareholder spreadsheets, right? So I like that, simplifying that breakdown to say the old paradigm, leaders don't feel, they think. And here you are, an example of a great leader that both thinks and feels. That is awesome. I also really like, giving a few case examples just to make it even more real for our viewers and understand that this isn't all theory. This isn't all theoretical. This is actually needs to be applied. So I wonder in that as you're, helping me have a better understanding of who you're becoming is a leader who's not afraid to show his heart. And yet you're still anchored in all of that amazing intelligence and performative design, right?
I have to tell you that you're triggering me right now.
Oh, okay.
And you're triggering me because you talk about great leaders. And the headspace that I'm in right now, where I'm at, is that I want to take the word great out of the equation, and I want to introduce the word humble instead. And part of why I say that is that leadership is an obligation. With it comes many gifts, but it's an obligation. And in my own journey, there's nothing great about my journey. It's a journey of making mistakes, learning from them, getting knocked down, getting back up again. The outside world thinks it's all great, but it's actually a journey of humility, because I don't have all the answers, and I'm learning more of them over time. But it's that humility that I think is so critical to what leadership has to be today. I mean, we've got so many terrible examples of what leadership shouldn't look like, but unfortunately they're in positions of authority. And that's just not my story, right? I have to approach it from humility, not greatness.
Thank you. Thanks for being authentic. Thanks for letting me know the charge. It resonates 100%. And to play together here, what's coming through is the notion that great leaders think and go for power and control, and it's more about them, just like it was about you being the smartest guy in the room. Humble leaders feel and think, right? And now, as you said that, it just, it went through me like deep truth. We call it the truth arrows, right? The deep truth arrows moving through me. And you're absolutely right. And you're absolutely right also that as we look around the world, you know, I love to reference the Edelman Trust Barometer, but we're at an all-time low in human history of trusting leaders. Like, that's an important statistic to pay attention to and to hear what Gerard is saying, because that is why we're at that place. Why don't you trust the leader? Is because you're wondering, I think they're just leading for themselves. I think they're just stepping on my head in order to get more power, more money, whatever else. The last thing I'll say, then I'll pass it back to you, is also your share there brought a reminder of a metaphorical teaching from the ancient ways, which is about the wolf pack and the alpha. And most people always think the leader, you know, the great leader is in the front. The humble leader leads from the back so that he can see what's happening in the whole tribe. And that's the actual biological truth of the alpha wolf is the one in the back to make sure that none get left behind. And his right-hand wolf man is at the front leading, but it's a powerful metaphor. And that's what I see mirroring that back to you, where you were that alpha leading out of power and control, and now you're leading from humility, and it's refreshing.
Well, thank you.
It's awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I have a little bit of difficulty with the analogy of the wolf pack. And part of why I have some difficulty is that, yes, in my first version of leadership, I was leading in all the wrong ways. But I'm not sure I fully buy into this idea of servant leadership, leading from the back. And part of why I say that is leaders have a way of seeing what others can't always see. So that's the obligation I talk about, where you actually do need to at times lead from the front, but bring everyone along. So this idea of trying to lead from the back actually doesn't really sit that well for me, because if you know where you're going, how can you lead from the back? You've got to step a little bit into the front, but honor the space that everyone is bringing to that.
Maybe it's a circumambulating style of leadership, right? And or circular leadership, where as a leader, I trust my COO, my wingman or woman. That's another piece. But yeah, no, absolutely. I do think you're right. And I think that's, and I humbly admit, I feel like maybe that's where I've fallen and made mistakes as a leader in some of my clinical director roles is, you know, all the crap rolls downhill. And so I was always having to deal with that. And I think I probably did play more into the servant leadership. And, you know, that's part of my shadow and my stories to work through. But it's a really good teaching. It's a really good teaching. I wonder if before we take this break, I want to know if you could reference one other case example where, and especially I'm thinking back to like early days as you're having the awakening, you said roughly mid-40s, where you had the courage to put your heart out into a corporate environment. And you were, you know, what happened? You were, hopefully, I'd love a story where you were pleasantly surprised that it was okay. But what do you remember happening there as you started to experiment?
I have a very vivid memory. Historically, I used to get my top 150 leaders together every 6 months, and we talk about strategy, business performance, all those things that tend to go on in those sorts of events. And at that time, I thought, I'm actually not going to do that. There's a role for that, but I'm instead going to talk about vulnerability. And I wrote my speech, threw it away. And it took me about 3 months of finding the courage to actually have the conversation that I wanted to have with these 150 leaders. So the conversation I had with them was, who you see is not who I am. When investors ask me, what's keeping you awake at night? I'm not actually thinking about the share price. I'm thinking about the fact that I missed my kid's soccer game because I was traveling. So I leant into that vulnerability. And candidly, I shed a tear on stage. And the output was fascinating. It was the first and only time in my life that I got a standing ovation. But I didn't get it from 150 people. I got it from about two-thirds of the audience. So one-third came up afterwards and thanked me for inspiring them to have a conversation that they wanted to have with someone important in their lives. One-third were like, huh, this is interesting. I'm not sure what to do with it, but I'm intrigued, but I'm just going to sit on the fence for a bit. And one-third were like, that is not cool or appropriate for a corporate leader. I don't want to have anything to do with that. And for me, that's mirrored some of the journey I see all of us on, right? We're at different stages of readiness to embrace a different way of leading.
Wow. Beautiful share. Thank you so much. And yeah, I mean, a beautiful, being vulnerable as a leader, that is lead with heart. So thank you for bringing that. We're going to be right back after this break, guys. Stay tuned to learn more about the art of transformation with Gerard and Jesse here on Lead with Heart. We'll be right back with more insights, stories, and practices to help you lead from your whole self. This is Lead with Heart on Now Media Television. Leadership isn't just about decisions. It's about presence, compassion, and courage. I'm Dr. Jesse Hansen, somatic psychologist and healer. And on Lead with Heart, we explore what happens when we lead with awareness, compassion, and the body in mind. From brain health to relational intelligence, from trauma-informed leadership to embodied teams, each episode reveals a deeper way to lead. Lead with Heart is airing now on Now Media TV. Because the greatest leaders don't just guide people, they awaken them. And we're back. I'm Dr. Jesse Hansen, and you're watching Lead with Heart on Now Media Television. Let's continue embracing leadership with
presence and purpose.
Welcome back to Lead with Heart. I'm your host, Dr. Jesse Hansen. And in this segment, we're going to go deeper in this conversation with Gerard Schmidt around the process that I'm calling the lotus, the ability to transform, the ability to take things that seem crappy and turn them into something beautiful. So stay tuned. We're going to dive back in right now. Gerard, I've known you for over a decade, I think close to 15 years now, and you are one of the most potent transformers I have got to witness in my life and all the work I've done. And so I want to just open the floor to you to talk about transformation, obviously from the inside out is preferred. What do you know about this art form and how it's impacted you as a man and a leader, father?
I'll get to that. I want to come back to this idea of humility for a second, because even the way you portrayed me infers that I've transformed and I haven't. I'm on a journey. I feel like I'm one of those kids' transformer toys where I haven't fully morphed into the final product, but I'm somewhere in between.
Yes.
That's really important for me, because I know there's work still ahead for me. What I would say is that what I'm noticing is shifting for me as part of this transformation is that I used to focus so much on how do I solve the problem that's in front of me? What frameworks do I use? What analytics do I bring to the table? So as an idea or a client or a problem was coming to me, I would be processing ahead of time, trying to solve it. I've shifted towards being much, much more intuitive at accepting whatever's going to come my way without predefining where the answer will take me. So what that really is meaning for me is I'm relying a lot more on what are the signals I'm picking up from my body and from other parts of what I have versus just what's in this part of my brain. Yeah. And I'm finding that, A, it's actually a lot more fun.
Yes.
A lot more fun.
A lot more fun.
And it's allowing me to tap into a much broader version of who I am as a leader and to hold space for whatever that problem is. So, you know, I coach CEOs and they're across a wide range of sectors. You know, one's leading a global footwear company. The other one is in industrials. The other one is in banking. The other one's in technology. All these wildly different sectors. And that's okay, because I'm not trying to know as much as they do about their space. What I'm trying to simply do is to meet them where they're at in their leadership journey and then help them take the next few steps on that journey. Sometimes it means I've got to lean heavily into the left part of my brain, share with them some wisdoms of what I've experienced in the past. Other times, it's actually holding space to have them help them change their own behaviors and tap into why are they showing up in a certain way. I couldn't have shown up that way and served these leaders had I not gone through that own journey myself, if I wasn't still transforming.
Thank you. Yeah. And I will absolutely meet you in the ing-ness of transforming as opposed to transformed. The work is never done. And yet there are graduating landmarks, and you've hit a number of graduating landmarks. And that's what I'm seeing, respecting and honoring. And I love the humility that it is an ing ongoing process. You mentioned my favorite thing to go into, so I can't not come back to this, but embodiment. The journey of the head to the heart is only whatever, 8 to 12 inches, but it can take us a long time to really awaken to that. And, you know, I call it body wisdom, is when we're able to not just think through whatever thing we're processing, but actually feel into and recognize patterns of contraction, patterns of expansion, warmth and coldness in our body, all these little things as clues and indicators. And I also know one of the core tenets that I was taught in my clinical training years ago was that we can only take others down the path as far as we've gone ourselves. So to your point, if you hadn't have had the 2x4 slap you in your mid-40s and get you to start doing the work and opening up, absolutely you would not be as potent of a coach as you are now.
Well, I feel like I need 2x4s
every few days.
Okay. 4 days. Hopefully not every few days, but certainly periodically, just to keep pushing me down that path, right?
Well, maybe you're evolving from 2x4s to, you know,
just a nudge.
That's the nudge, or a tap from a friend. But yes, I get it. Yeah. Oh man. Now, and so I wonder too, in this segment around the transformation, just wondering, are you okay to go a little deeper into just, yeah, what I would call body awareness? And, you know, I don't know if there's any case example that comes up or just some part of your journey you remember where just this awakening of, oh my goodness, like, you know, so many people, I'll give you a quick example. We don't realize we're always locking our jawbone, right? Almost all of us North Americaners. And it's not actually the de facto setting of our nervous system, a soft jaw. I've got my little 4-month-old baby now. He's always soft jaw on it. It's true. That's the original program. So, you know, that's a very simple one, but just the act of softening the jawbone starts to let cerebral spinal fluid move more fluently. It helps us to stay more present. It allows us more of a chance to actually feel what's going on down here. So I'm just curious, if in your unique scenario, what do you know about embodiment? And
I'm smiling because I wish I had the wisdom of your 4-month-old, because even to this day, I still struggle with the soft tension in my jaw. But in the spirit of transforming versus being at the end of the goal, I do notice a lot more that I pay attention to sensations that are going on in different parts of my body. And they seem to most show up when I'm strongly disagreeing with whatever's going on in whatever situation I'm finding myself in. And I'm learning to use those as signals to say, wait a sec, I need to behave differently.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there were times in the past when I'd be leaning into my brain to try and solve, why does this feel weird? Why does this not feel right? And I was ignoring
that.
It.
Yeah,
ignore that. And what I'm finding is this is a much better early warning indicator that something's not on, that something doesn't add up.
Yeah.
The brain's actually pretty slow on that front, right? The body's a much, much better early warning indicator. And for me, it usually sits literally in my belly where it just doesn't feel right.
Yeah.
And what I'm trying to do is continue to build better practices to broaden that awareness, whether it's through my breath work, whether it's through how I hold my body. But it's a journey. And, you know, I think for me, the learning as to why this is still transforming is it takes almost a daily practice to build into that, right? It doesn't come naturally to me.
Yeah. Well, it's so funny. I always hear people say that it doesn't come naturally. And yet, ironically, it is actually natural in terms of source codes, original programming. So I'm hearing you saying all this. I know that you're not alone in this, and not just even in the corporate world, but almost throughout the world. You know, we have developed a culture that is so disembodied and so stuck in our head and our screens and our devices. And, you know, this is even more reason why embodiment and leading with heart matters more than ever right now, because obviously our planet is hurting. And so I guess, yeah, as I was hearing that, I was just thinking about how prevalent that is in especially the corporate environment, but everywhere else. So I'm understanding that you're now getting better and better at listening to your body as you navigate daily life in the world, corporate world. What else could you say just in terms of people that are listening that maybe are going through something similar, hopefully having some kind of awareness of their own to realize, oh my goodness, maybe I do that. How much as you look back, and especially when you were fully running these big companies, did you just see that pattern in almost everyone that, like, were you the only one living in your head, or was it
I think
culture?
We were predominantly in our heads. And I don't know if I use the word living in our heads, but I felt like I was running on autopilot, as was everybody else around me. All well-intentioned, largely, but autopilot.
Yeah.
And the shift that's going on for me right now is slowing down and being much more intentional around what's the real impact I'm trying to have in a given situation, rather than reaching for an answer.
Yeah.
And that slowing down to ask what's the real impact is allowing me the space to take more in and hopefully have a more positive impact on.
Yeah. It reminds me of the earlier segment where you were just sharing about the ability to recognize in those case examples you gave, like, okay, great. Yeah. Here's the numbers and here's this, but here's what's actually happening to these people who are trapped in a land that's being bombed right now. Right. So that is, I think, where lead with heart does not mean just be a nice guy all the time and, you know, sing kumbaya.
I couldn't agree more. In fact, those that sing kumbaya, I wish them well.
Say kumbaya.
But they're not particularly well suited to leading in the corporate world. But you have to be able to hold space for shareholder returns, for driving performance, but you can also do that by integrating a more wholesome sense of who you are as a leader.
Yeah. Yeah. And to know thyself, you will lead with heart naturally.
Well, and I will maybe push a little bit on that, because leading with heart infers and leads credibility to the heart being dominant. And I would maybe push a little bit on that idea to say, going back to your first idea, it's actually integrating these two together.
Balance.
It's heart and head together, right? It's that balance.
Yeah.
I've seen too much rotation in both directions if you lean here or you lean here, right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. No, it is the balance. It is the balance. And I guess why I chose this name for the show is simply because, kind of like I said, that I believe culturally we have this left brain addiction that is at this point, probably most of us need to bring more heart into our leadership, not at the cost of the head, but in balance with it. So
well said.
Yeah, well said. Thank you. Well co-said. Well, thank you, Gerard, so much, man, for diving deeper into transformation. When we get back from this break, our final segment is going to be about harvesting the fruits on this tree and reaping the wisdom. So stay tuned. We'll be right back here on Now Media TV. We'll be right back with more insights, stories, and practices to help you lead from your whole self. This is Lead with Heart on Now Media Television. Leadership isn't just about decisions, it's about presence, compassion, and courage. I'm Dr. Jesse Hansen, somatic psychologist and healer, and on Lead with Heart, we explore what happens when we lead with awareness, compassion, and the body in mind. From brain health to relational intelligence, from trauma-informed leadership to embodied teams, each episode reveals a deeper way to lead. Lead with Heart is airing now on Now Media TV. Because the greatest leaders don't just guide people, they awaken them. And we're back. I'm Dr. Jesse Hansen, and you're watching Lead with Heart on Now Media Television. Let's continue embracing leadership with presence and purpose.
You can stay tuned to Lead with Heart and all your Now Media favorites by simply downloading the free app on iOS, Android, it's on Apple TV, Roku. You can also listen on podcasts with Apple, Spotify, iHeartRadio, SiriusXM, all the great ones. We're out there. So please stay tuned on Now Media TV. We've got you covered. And we're back here on Lead with Heart in this beautiful land of Costa Rica in Metamor Finca, the transformation farm. And we've been diving in with Gerard Schmidt for the last while. And in this final segment, we want to extract and appreciate and acknowledge the wisdom that I've learned, viewers are learning from listening. One of my favorite things that you said right away was you were able to lovingly call yourself out on this perfectionistic performative measures. And you also highlighted it with naming, it's not bad or wrong. It's actually really important, especially for leadership. However, if that's all you got, you saw the hard way, it didn't get you what you wanted.
Right.
So just wonder if you can say any more about that and just let flow any other wisdom that's, that's coming through you.
The performative side of me led me to achieve a lot of good things. So I don't want to dishonor that, right? I achieved things that were important. But it was also self-limiting. It didn't equip me to deal with situations I've never experienced before. It didn't allow me to have the impact I really wanted to have on society more broadly. And that's what this journey is for me, is how do I have more impact. I'll give you a few examples. So in my coaching practice, I typically am coaching aspiring CEOs or first-time CEOs. That's the group I tend to work with. And yet the range of situations that I'm dealing with couldn't be more different. You know, I talked earlier on about the different sectors, but putting that to one side, one leader I'm working with him on how to build more a bolder, more courageous agenda for himself. That's got nothing to do with strategy. That's about how do you find that heart courage and heart and soul. You know, another leader, we are working on a very, very messy restructuring turnaround of his business. And the real work that we're doing there is helping him lean into some very difficult, bloody-minded decisions he has to make quickly to try and change the trajectory of the organization. On a third example, I'm working with a leader where he's been a great number two and he's trying to find his authentic leader voice that's not subordinate to anybody else as he tries to step into that top role. Yeah. So none of those have anything to do with left brain orientation. It's all to do with marrying that, recognizing that, you know, these are leaders that have to perform, have to deliver shareholder returns, but to get there, they've got to tap into other parts of who they are.
Yeah.
Other behaviors. And that for me is what this work is all about.
Yeah. And you know, as psychologists, I've had the blessing and privilege of working with many amazing leaders. And that what you just said there was to get through this, what seems like a business decision, a left brain decision, you actually need to go into what I call the work, but meaning the deeper understanding of self. And I feel like that is often the block that stops people from making progress professionally.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. You've seen that plenty as well.
I'm a living embodiment of
you were.
Of that.
You were. Well, yeah.
I was, sometimes I am.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so if I was to kind of distill that down, for me, what that's really emerging is allowing each of us to rely more on our intuitive selves in all of ourselves, yeah, versus just an orientation towards performance.
Yeah.
There's a much deeper wisdom there that we can tap into.
Yeah. And what I love, imagining you continuing to reach more people, all of us helping to reach more leaders to get them to what I would call wake up or know thyself deeper. I was raised very humbly and in a social justice warrior kind of family. And my original programming was such that it was like basically more or less help the less fortunate than us. And of course, I want that. And yet when I went down that path professionally, what I came to see very quickly was that so many, if not all, of the existing government systems that are in place to help those impoverished or people experiencing homelessness or foster children or whatever it was, those systems, they're doing the best they can, and yet they're just very inadequate. And that's when I turned my energy away from that and said, no, I actually don't want to spend my life doing that. And went into the healer role, which eventually took me to psychologist, which eventually took me to Passages Malibu, where all of a sudden the guy who was raised by his family to only sort of help less fortunate, I was being blessed to be able to help people in leadership roles. And not only that was an amazing new learning for me, but also that was a powerful way to realize, wow, if I'm able to just even help one person, like someone like you, you are going to impact thousands to tens of thousands to even hundreds of thousands of people. And so I just sing that and echo that to say it's so powerful. I don't want to overlook that. Not only, you know, I know you want to be humble and I honor that. And I also want to acknowledge you that you are a rare man. There aren't a lot and woman, but human, there aren't yet. We're working on it. That's why we're here. That's why we're having this conversation. There aren't a lot of leaders that are really willing to be so vulnerable. Like you said, a third of your population. And that talk was like, forget it. What are you thinking? You can't do that as a corporate leader. So I just want to name that and remind for all of us that are there listening that, you know, one person in a leadership role changing themselves helps to change so many others.
You said it better than I could. I mean, I'm a work in progress. I was leading a company of 30,000 people, but I know that I was showing up as a much better leader for them.
Yeah.
And I was having a better impact on society. And if I take a look at the clients that I have, collectively, you know, they're probably leading 250,000 people.
Wow.
And if I can change and help them be wiser leaders, aren't we better off as a society?
Yes. Yes. And then we could see those Edelman Trust Barometer stats go back up in the direction that we hope for. So Gerard, I want to cover one more piece here is around you and Emerald Ridge. And as I've said, I've witnessed your path for a while now, and I was very excited when you let me know you were stepping away from all major CEO roles and stepping into boards. And now tell us more about Emerald Ridge and what you're doing there, as well as why that has meaning to you.
Yeah. Well, again, there's a flow going on in my life, right? I was going through this one chapter of going from one CEO role to the next. And I haven't entirely turned my back on that. I've got one foot in it. And the one foot that I have in it is the board work that I do. So I sit on three boards, a board in Australia, one in France, one in the US. And that allows me to almost have an eagle eye view of how leaders are showing up, but from the boardroom perspective. And then the second way that I spend my time is through my Emerald Ridge coaching practice, working with, as I said, you know, aspiring CEOs or first-time CEOs, helping them make that transition, because it's hands down the most lonely role out there. And I've yet to meet a CEO who, when they step into the role, realizes they were actually never ready for the role. We all think we're ready. We get all these credentials, but you step into and you think, oh boy, okay, this is kind of different.
Yeah.
And that's the what I try and do with Emerald Ridge, is try and close that gap and help them just be the best leaders they can be.
And what does it mean to you to get to step into that role as elder, coach, healer? How's that for you?
I love the word elder, because I feel like I'm entering that chapter of my life where I can celebrate their successes, lob truth arrows their way when needed, but it's from a position of care and love.
Yeah.
And do it with a from a position of just wanting the best for them. And that just gives me huge joy.
Yeah, it fills you up, right?
It fills me up. It's why I am on this earth at this moment, that this is the work I need to be doing.
Oh, I got a little truth tingles there when you said that this is the work I need to be doing. Yeah. It feels really, really true to hear that. And yeah, I can testify as someone that has known you and witnessed you, that as you started stepping into that role of elder and coach, it just, yeah, the level of joy and the level of seeing you feel more in your purpose. Yeah. And yet I still believe that all the years and all the story you've told us today, that was perfect. And that was, in a way, like that part of your purpose to get to this point.
I couldn't have got here had I not had those experiences, right?
Yeah. And you couldn't have gotten here to Emerald Ridge had you not been hit by the 2x4 and decided to show up.
Yeah.
And that's one last piece of wisdom I want to reflect to you and our listeners is, 2x4s are going to come, especially if you're in leadership roles and you got lots of duties and responsibilities and tons of variables. The main choice point is, do I choose to look deeper? Do I choose to actually go inward and step up? Or do I choose to try to use my head again and figure it out and or dodge it, avoid it? People turn to all sorts of distractions in moments like that. So just want you to know, I commend you for that. And that's, to me, that's the best part of leading with heart, is that choice to step up and face not just the left brain intellectual parts of the challenge, but the human parts. And why am I challenged by this? And why is it so hard for me to relate to this person, right? So really beautiful, man. So if our viewers want to keep in touch with you or learn more about the beautiful work you're doing, how can they find you?
The best way to reach me is via my website, www.emeraldridge.tech, and feel free to reach out. I'd love to have exploratory conversation.
Well, thank you so much for joining us here on Lead with Heart today, Gerard. Beautiful conversation. Grateful for you, grateful for everything you bring to this world, and keep shining.
Thank you. Thanks.
Honored. Thank you, everyone, for staying tuned. Lead with Heart. We're going to keep coming with more great episodes filled with authenticity, vulnerability, heart-centered leadership. So we'll see you next time down here in Costa Rica. Pura vida. Be well.